good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here, back in our own studio tonight, here in the buckle of the Bible Belt. The plane didn't crash, and Homeland Security didn't put me on their no-fly list yet. And I mentioned it the other night, but really didn't get into it because of the tragedy of the shooting in at Virginia Tech. But thanks an awful lot to everybody who made that adventure for Stephanie Miller and Bill Press and Tom Hartman and me, all the out-of-towners. So much of a hoot. Jeff Farias and other folks who live there in Phoenix are kind of used to Phoenix hospitality, but it was brand new for us, and plus the people that came from out of town for the party. It was just a heck of a bash. I looked at some of the pictures, and yes, indeed, I had had quite a bit of wine, hadn't I? But it was just a lot of fun, and we do appreciate it. Sometimes I feel weird talking about fun, given the way things are so bloody right now. You know what I mean? But still, it was just a lot of fun to be out there, and we do appreciate it to everybody, the advertisers out there, the sponsors, the staff at KPHX, and especially the people that came to that gig. It was an awful lot of fun. I hope we do it again. So thanks. Thanks for that. Once again, there are more topics to discuss here than hours in the program, but we'll try. We have sound from Too Much Cappuccino Perino. Not a whole lot, because we don't want to, you know, just rev you up so fast you won't be able to sleep tonight. But the speedy Spinderella is trying to newspeak her way out of questions about the ongoing carnage in Iraq, or as Bush and the killer Dick call it, the incredible progress in an emerging democracy. Don't you love that? Oh, God. How many people murdered today in Iraq? Most of them in Baghdad. 200? 200? Another 150 wounded, and Bush wonders why Congress, the Democrats in Congress, are refusing to give him a blank check to continue this murder and insanity. Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi held a very quick press briefing following their totally meaningless meeting with the Chucklenuts. We have a comment from Senator Reid regarding that to share with you. And, of course, we're on pins and needles waiting for the torture boy testimony tomorrow, right? Isn't that when Gonzo takes his seat? He's been really prepping, really studying, really, you know, dry runs. You have to do that when you're going to tell the truth. You have to work your ass off to get all the T's crossed and I's dotted when you're going to tell the truth. You have to have some of your remaining staff who are graduates of either Falwell or Robertson's so-called universities. You know, just dry run you through everything, because after all, they are just such devout Christians, and they're just trying to make sure that you're telling nothing but the truth. We're also going to wait and see tomorrow if the real linchpin, Monica Gooding, Gooding, is granted immunity so she can testify freely about the real involvement of the White House in these firings. It's going to be difficult for her to turn down immunity, you see. Once they grant immunity, now that takes a vote, a two-thirds majority on the Senate Judiciary Committee, I'm not sure which one is looking to get her in there. But it takes a two-third majority, not a simple majority, to grant immunity. So I'm sure the Republicans will try to squelch this. But how is that going to look? No, the Republicans are going to say, you know, first they said it was a perjury trap. And now that the threat of perjury is being removed, everything's being removed. We just want the truth. Nope. Republicans are still going to say no. What do you want to bet? We'll see how that works out. Anyway, a lot of stuff to watch for tomorrow, too. Now, as far as Bush and the Democrats today, of course, Bush is being the great, solid American Christian leader. These are his claims, not mine. I'm not trying to bash him with the word Christian. He says that. He says it. That's the title he's chosen. So this great American war president, Christian leader, says he's still going to veto any measure that calls for U.S. troops to withdraw from Iraq. Now, if that isn't the indication or a clear marker of someone who loves war as long as other people are being blown to pieces and dying, then by God, tell me what is. What is a marker for someone who loves war? Any person in their right mind, in history, unless they were mad, key being in the right mind, once they have engaged in a war, do everything they can to end it. Once they realize that it's going to become a war of attrition and it's going to go on forever. Oh, sure, back in the day, the Hundred Years' War, in history, the War of the Roses, the War of this, the War of that. But these were madmen. Bush met with a group of Democrats, I guess a few Republicans were there too in the cabinet room for about an hour. Afterwards, the Democrats said, yep, we're going to send the president legislation and hopes that Bush would sign it. The White House said, no, it's not going to happen. Harry Reid tried to pressure Bush to sign the legislation. He said, quote, we believe he must search his soul, his conscience, and find out what is the right thing for the American people, end quote. His soul, his conscience. He's a bloodlusted son of a bitch, Harry. There is no soul. There is no kind. You're asking if Nosferatu has a soul or Nosferatu. You're asking if Dragul has a soul. Come on, Harry. I mean, fight the good fight, mouth the words, but you're talking to George Bush. Of course, what the Democrats are offering is more than the psychopath has asked for, where it concerns money for the troops. What the Democrats are offering leaves the troops there for considerable periods of time with some goals and benchmarks that have been called for by the American people, the Iraq Study Group, many in the military. But you know what the Republicans are calling it? A surrender date. A surrender date. That's what I think John Boehner is calling it that. Boehner, why don't you dress yourself out in the required military gear and get your ass over there? And McCain, you do the same. And the rest of these right-wingers, these Republicans who seem to enjoy the taste and the stench of war and death and corpses and blood, why don't you go over there? Let some of these 18 and 19 and 20-year-olds whom you are turning into killing machines, let them come home. Let them come home to their parents and sisters and brothers and spouses and children before they become so twisted and so mad and so insane that when they do come home, we're going to have more Murrah federal buildings. Why don't you Republicans who lust after war and death and the stench of it, go do it? Why do you insist on sending kids and not so kids, 35 and 40 and 45-year-old men who are in the reserve of the National Guard because they wanted to serve their country somehow? Not in the combat zone. These are people with children, some of them with grandchildren. They have mortgages and jobs and hopes and dreams. And this bloodlusting son of a bitch in the White House and these cheap Republicans who have allowed this for the past 4 years, they sit back on their haunches and say, well, freedom isn't free. You hypocritical thugs, you hypocritical thugs. I'd like to see one of you, just one of you. How about you, Boehner? You start it, huh? Go ahead, John. You start it. Go sign up. You're not too old now. Go do it, John.
No. You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Past the hour, this sit-down between Bush and the Democrats and a couple of token Republicans came on the same day, of course, that four large bombs, as many as six, exploded in mostly Shia areas of Baghdad. 178 people dead. The deadliest day in Baghdad since Bush announced his surge. Huh? See, only you and I, for some reason, Truth Seeker, only you and I understand this. The military minds that are fulfilling Bush's madness seem to not understand it. The leading lights in the Bush crime family don't seem to understand it. The right-wing pundits don't understand it. The Republican leadership doesn't understand it. But you and I do. This war is lost. When you have people that are capable of bombing the parliament, when you have people who are capable of causing this kind of carnage, the suicide bombers, there is no way, ever, at all, it cannot be done, that this filthy war will be in Bush and Cheney and Wolfowitz and Pearl and Abrams, were Abramoff's words, will be won. It will not. Ever. And they know it. So what does that leave a simpleton like me to conclude? It's this. They are mad and they enjoy death. What else am I to conclude? Robert Gates in Israel today called the bombing horrifying. But he also said, let me see. He also said, I've got it right here, because, you know, on the one hand, he calls it horrifying. On the other hand, he says that the U.S. military and the Bush crime family will persist with the so-called security plan. He said a spike in violence was to be expected. They call this a spike in violence. A spike in violence, that's what it's called. It's not called mass death or murder. Or corpses, or incinerated bodies, or heads flying, guts all over the streets. It's called a spike in violence, and it was, you know, expected. Gates in Tel Aviv today said, quote, "We have anticipated from the very beginning that the insurgency and others would increase the violence to make the people of Iraq believe the plan is a failure. We intend to persist to show that it is not," end quote. If that's not madness, will somebody please tell me what is? What constitutes insanity, if not that? Now, I realize Gates is not a policymaker. That is left to the real killers, the real sociopaths who are running the United States of America. Bush and Cheney and Wolfowitz and oh, yes, of course, he's still there. And Rumsfeld. They are the ones who are still setting policy, and a little a silver-haired, I don't know how I could see Gates in anything other than as the president of a local chapter of the Lions Club, and there he is running the War Department. He is not making policy. He is closing his eyes to this mass killing, and he's implementing the policy that is coming from insane people. You want to hear what Reed had to say today? This is after the tough-talking Texan, the killer from Kitty Bunkport, dug in his spurs and insisted on a blank check to continue his mass killing, and no bring-him-home date, no bring-him-home date. Harry Reid here tries to set the record straight regarding the Bush lies about how the Pentagon is running out of money and that our troops will suffer as a result of being brought home.
This is part of the White House spin that we've heard now for weeks. A year ago, when the supplemental was here before us, there wasn't a peep out of the president. That supplemental was not completed until sometime in June. It is now the middle of April. The bills were given to the Congress about the same time last year. The president has tried to paint the picture that the troops are running out of money. The nonpartisan Congressional Reference Service says they have enough money to function the way they are now until July. The Pentagon itself has said they have money until sometime late in June. This is all part of the spin coming from George Bush and Dick Cheney.
Part of the spin. The bloody spin. The spin that is speeded up by the slippery quality of the blood of Iraqis and American soldiers. Blood has kind of a viscous quality to it, but it's also slippery. And if you pour enough blood on something, the gears and the wheels keep spinning. You knew that, didn't you?
The next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
26 before the hour. I got some emails while I was in Phoenix and doing the show Monday night with all the blood and the gore and the shock and the horror from Virginia Tech, and just didn't have a chance to share any of them with you. I don't think. I might have read one or two, but I missed this one. I've got two here, I think. This is from Steve-O. He writes, Mike, tonight, he meant last night, Monday night, Tuesday night. Was it Tuesday night? On the evening news and on Hardball, they showed separate clips of Too Stupid to Be President speaking to the throng of survivors and those in grief at Virginia Tech. Thank God those clips only ran for about a minute. My tolerance for watching him doesn't last much more than that. And I noticed he was reading his remarks. He probably didn't even have a hand in writing those remarks. I doubt he even understood the sounds he was making as they left his mouth. I doubt he understood the words he was reading. Now, if it had been Bill Clinton giving that speech, he would have not had to look down so often repeatedly at his notes because there wouldn't have been any notes. President Clinton would have given that speech without notes or prepared text because he would have spoken directly from his heart, and he would have known what to say because the words would have been 100% his. No faceless speechwriter would have had to write a speech of condolence and sympathy for Clinton. Yeah, I noticed that too. I saw this email and I saw some video this morning of Bush trying to express his condolences, and once again, it's amazing to me how often I'm shocked by this this half-wit when he attempts to be anything other than a frat boy, a 60-something-year-old frat boy. And when I saw that, I just you get that gag reflex that comes after a while. You don't try to think about it or criticize it or say, oh, what a dumb son of a bitch. You feel the back of your throat kind of close up a little bit, just like, oh, my God. This is from Leslie in Allentown, PA. Mike, listening to the show, and this is Monday. And I have to comment here in regards to American society and gun-related deaths. I know socialism is a dirty word in our American society, and many times it's equated with communism, but do you find it a coincidence that the countries you named that have the lowest gun-related deaths are countries, many of Western Europe, which are socialized in health care, pension, taxes that go to ensure education, housing for people, benefits should you lose your job, etc.? I did a research paper comparing our health care system to Germany and Canada. It was stated in my textbook for this course that healthcare in this country, the U.S., is seen as a privilege, and in countries which are socialized to some degree, such as Canada or Germany, etc., healthcare is seen as a human right. I think this reflects our mentality. I think that's why we have such a high crime rate and why we are the richest country in the world and have homeless. People abroad are amazed by this. We have a capitalistic society, and with the way things are going, in fact, I think it's going from capitalism to corporatism, it isn't the same capitalism anymore. But I digress. My point is, Leslie writes, imagine if our tax money actually went to funding more social programs for people in our society and not funding wars. I think our mentality would change. Society would change here. There would be less crime, less poverty, etc., and less self-destruction. Yeah, but that's, you know, I'm sorry, Leslie, it's never been the American way. And you're, of course, you know why, because as you point out, capitalism is not user-friendly. Capitalism is not a system for human beings. It's a system for capital. That's why they call it capitalism. It's not family-friendly. It is not conducive to peace. It is not conducive to justice or fairness or honesty. Capitalism is an ism for capital, not for human beings. This comes from Bridget. Hi, Mike. Like so many of us, I've been in grief the past 3 days for the horror of Virginia Tech. So many young lives ended, so many families shattered, so many people who will have nightmares for the rest of their lives. As I watch some of the national coverage, hear the stories told by the survivors, follow the news media's loud trumpeting of every new morsel of information about the shooter, listen to the national hand-wringing by politicians and commentators alike, I'm struck by one thought. This terrible carnage, the senseless loss of life that we as a nation are riveted by, is what happens every single day in Iraq. Every single day, dozens of students and teachers and housewives doing their marketing and shopkeepers selling rugs and ordinary people just trying to live ordinary lives are mowed down by bullets or blown to pieces by bombs. Every single day, families are shattered, children are left fatherless, mothers scream with the unthinkable horror of watching the life flow out of the child they hold in their arms. Every single day, children witness events that will give them nightmares for the rest of their lives. Where's the national day of mourning for these deaths, for these shattered lives? When do our flags fly at half-staff for them? Are these lives less important than American lives? How do we as a people mourn for the 33 dead at a college in Virginia, but not for the 30 or 50 or 80 or 200 in the marketplace or on street corners in Iraq? How is it that we get national coverage of the memorial service at Virginia Tech, but we can't even have photographs of the flag-draped coffins of our soldiers coming home from Iraq? How do we justify having a president who will go to the memorial service in Virginia, but has yet, after 4 years, to attend a single service for even one soldier whose death he ordered with his lies? What will it take? That's the question you always ask, Mike, and I think it's the only really relevant one. What will it take for us to learn that guns are not the answer, that war is not the answer, that you can't bring peace or justice or democracy or mental health with guns and bombs? What will it take to get through the insane fear of the so-called other to our common humanity? What will it take for all those who grieve for the parents and sisters and brothers of those young people killed in Virginia to get that the parents and sisters and brothers of slaughtered Iraqi young people cry too? That they, too, don't know how they will bear the unbearable pain of never again holding their beloved child in their arms. They, too, have memorial services, but chances are that their memorial services will end with another bombing. And as anger and hatred is heaped on this young man, whom the media describe as a loner, as rage and blame are projected on the campus police, on gun laws, perhaps we should remember that the families of Iraqi victims have anger and hatred too when their loved ones are killed. Only theirs is heaped on American soldiers and on us. If I may borrow from Cindy Sheehan's latest amazing post at truthout.org, quote, "If we as a nation want to end the farce of false patriotism to justify wars for profit and empire, we will have to sacrifice until it hurts. In this cleansing act will come redemption, because then we can be assured that all of the children of the world are safe and sound. If we don't work to end the absolute stranglehold of violence we are clutched in, then we deserve what we get." End quote. Please don't misunderstand me. I don't want for a moment to suggest that the deaths of these young students have anything to do with Iraq. but they both have to do with us as a nation clutched in an absolute stranglehold of violence. As the NRA rushes to push the shoot first, ask question later laws through legislatures across the country, we descend even further into the dark. Speaking of the violence and the dark, Sunday, the day before this cold-blooded rampage, was Holocaust Remembrance Day. I'd like to share a poem from someone who knows the secret of keeping it lit. It's an untitled poem by Wendell Berry. To my granddaughters who visited the Holocaust Museum on the day of the burial of Yitzhak Rabin, November 6, 1995. Quote, "Now you know the worst we humans have to know about ourselves, and I'm sorry, for I know you will be afraid. To those of our bodies given without pity to be burned, I know there is no answer but loving one another, even our enemies, and this is hard. But remember, when a man of war becomes a man of peace, he gives a light, divine though it is also human. When a man of peace is killed by a man of war, he gives a light. You do not have to walk in darkness. If you have the courage for love, you may walk in light. It will be the light of those who have suffered for peace. It will be your light." Wendell Berry, from a Timbered Choir, The Sabbath Poems, 1979 to 1997. As always, Bridget. And a P.S. And then there's the decision today to return control of women's bodies to the same white men who love to make war. Appropriate somehow. I'm so angry I can't see straight, and I'm heartsick. I remember what it was like to feel like a prisoner with no choice. Perhaps the freedom that women have had in the last 30-plus years is like so many other freedoms. We don't value it until it's gone, and then we have to fight for it all over again. Bridget.
The sky hanging on me, hanging on me. Now won't you leave me in my misery? Trouble, trouble, please be kind. I don't want no fight, and I haven't got.
Some writers and critics who prophesize with your pen. And keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now will be later to win. For the times, they are a-changing.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Listening to that song, I the times there are changing. Are they really? Are they just going backwards? When Dylan wrote that song so many years ago, there was a sense that things were changing and changing for the better. I don't know. It's difficult. It's still possible, but it's difficult to, for me anyway, to get the sense that the times they are a change in for the good. I know that's possible. I have to know that's possible because I've got the responsibility still of raising children and grandchildren. So I've got to maintain the idea that the times are changing for the good. And it gets more and more difficult every day. Today was another example. The ruling by the United States Supreme Court. That really has nothing to do with abortion. What it has to do with is the idea that members of Congress can make decisions that should be made by a doctor and a woman, and possibly that woman's partner or spiritual advisor or whomever else would be involved, but certainly not members of Congress. Now, we know what happens. You remember the Terri Schiavo case. You remember the barking mad, frothing, stupefyingly insane crap that went on with the Republican lawmakers and the Republican talk show hosts and the Republican president, and everybody just clawing and scratching at this woman's body, eating her and biting her and ripping her guts out and devouring her. You remember that, right? Because of the utter, complete, total lack of respect for the fact that Terri Schiavo had died years ago. Well, it's the same pack of madmen. The five Catholics, I believe, on the United States Supreme Court ruled today on what was ostensibly an abortion issue. But no abortion issue is an abortion issue. It's a privacy issue. It's a medical issue. It is a decision issue, a decision to be made by what used to fondly be called a doctor and his or her patient. It's astonishing. A statement from a statement from the Center for Reproductive Rights, Nancy Northrup, who's the president of that organization, among other things, she said today, quote, "The court has dramatically reduced the ability of doctors to provide services that, in their opinion, are the safest, best options to protect women's health. This court believes that members of Congress, not doctors, are in the best position to make medical decisions for their patients. In direct contradiction to earlier rulings and established law, today the court announced that there are some aspects of women's health it is willing to sacrifice. This is a terrifying development," Ms. Northrup continued, "one with implications far beyond the abortion debate. Every American who cares about women's health and a doctor's ability to treat his or her patient appropriately should be alarmed by this ruling." Now, for the Democratic senators, once and former, who voted to confirm Sammy the Fish Alito, and I don't know if Edwards did, I don't know if Clinton did, I don't know if Obama did. I mean, maybe all that happened before Obama was elected, I guess. But for the Democratic senators and would-be presidents, presidential candidates who voted for the confirmation of Sammy the Fish Alito, how dare you say a freaking word today because you put the son of a bitch in there. Now, again, I'm just guessing. I don't know how many Democratic senators who voted for the confirmation of Alito and the confirmation of Roberts are running for the presidency. But any Democratic senator who voted for either one of these two to be confirmed when Bush and his thuggish cadre of Dominionists made it perfectly clear that Bush was only going to nominate those who would utterly and absolutely end the right of a woman to seek medical counseling privately with her physician and her concept of morality or ethical behavior, and perhaps the person who helped get her in that position, and perhaps her advisors, the senators who voted for Alito and Roberts and Scalia, what the hell did you expect? So any Democratic senator who is talking in a negative way about this decision today or bitching and whining, sit down and shut your goddamn mouths because you don't have the right to speak on this. You had a chance. You could have denied the seating of these right-wing, Vatican-controlled freaks who now run the United States Supreme Court. You had a chance, and you didn't do it. So shut up. somehow women will once again figure out what to do. I swear to God, sometimes I think that between the Christian Protestant right in this country, the AIPAC apologists for the right-wing Israelis, and the Catholic militant right in this country that gets its orders from the Vatican, who in the hell is left that makes decisions in this country that is not connected with one of those three groups? Anyone? I'm angry, as you can probably tell. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Molloy. Stay with us. Welcome back, 7 past the hour. To all the people who I met at the party in Phoenix last Sunday afternoon, evening, that song you just heard is Wish You Were Here, which is Pink Floyd music. I'm not sure from what album or CD, but it's performed by the Royal Philharmonic. You can find it at any record store. And the first hour opening is Run Like Hell, also by Pink Floyd, also played by the Royal Philharmonic. Symphonic Pink Floyd. You can find it if you look for it. So to all the people who said, wow, I just, you know, I've heard that. I don't do it, but, you know, it's very deceptive. A lot of people also have emailed me and said, Jesus, will you get rid of the elevator Pink Floyd? Thanks a lot. All right. We want to play for you now some Too Much Cappuccino Perino from the press briefing today regarding a couple of issues. In this first one, this woman just, I don't know, she does some, I think what it is about Perino, not necessarily her speedy voice, but there's something about her entire presentation, her whole persona, that to me is just like fingernails down a chalkboard. This reporter asked Speedy Perino about Bush's constant and inappropriate use of the troops as a backdrop. Anytime he wants to make a political point, this time about the blank check he wants from Congress to continue his slaughter in Iraq, the reporter says, Dana, earlier this week, the president made his concerns known with military families surrounding him and members of the military and veterans. Is it unseemly that the troops should be used as props, if you will, in this debate?
I can assure you that this president doesn't think of any soldier or sailor or any man or woman that's in uniform as a prop. He is worried about their welfare. He wants to ensure that their mission, that they have all that they need to complete their mission, and that they are properly trained, and that they have the amount of support that they need back here at home, plus they're on the battlefield. And so I do think that it was appropriate for the president to talk with those families, just as I'm sure that the Democrats feel that it's appropriate for them as well.
But, you know, those uncaring, callous Democrats who just want the troops to come home alive and intact have kind of a different motivation, I think, Dana, although you cynical right-wingers, you cynical Republicans would probably argue with me on that. But her answer that the president doesn't think of any sailor or soldier as a prop, That's not a serious statement, right? I mean, every time this rat bastard needs something to give him gravitas, he goes in front of people in uniform. Either it is the United States military, or cops, or firefighters, or EMT people. And he arranges them like so many little ducklings sitting there. And, of course, their commanders tell them to do it. The president needs a backdrop. I'm sorry. You're going to have to sit there or stand there. And they do. What choice do they have? Perino says he wants to ensure that their mission, and then she corrects herself and says that they have all that they need to complete their mission, and you want to scream at her. What mission? What are you talking about? Saddam and his sons have been executed. The government has been overthrown. The puppet is installed. The country is in chaos. None of the reasons for going has materialized. Not one. What mission, Dana? But the crack White House press corps just sits there. She goes on to say he wants to make sure they're properly trained. Dana, they have cut the training from 3 months to 7 weeks because there's not enough time to get more meat into the grinder. That, she goes on to say, he wants to make sure they have the amount of support that they need back here at home. Dana, the Veterans Administration medical system is dissolving like wet bathroom tissue. Dana! Troops that have come home are committing suicide because they can't get mental help. And so I do think that it was appropriate for the president to talk with those families. No, Dana, he wasn't talking with them. He was using them like wallpaper, like bathroom tissue, like shoe leather, like targets, like hamburger meat. And the press corps sits there. Next reporter wants to know about this Navy Admiral Fallon's testimony to Congress today, in which he said that the U.S. is losing ground daily in Iraq. The U.S. is losing ground daily in Iraq. An admiral, you know, Dana, like a general, only one that floats. The U.S. is losing ground daily. Hardly sounds like progress, huh? So the reporter asked Buffy the Truth Slayer the following. Buffy, or Dana, can I get your reaction to something Admiral Fallon said today when he was before the House Armed Services Committee? He was talking about Iraq, and he said, quote, I believe that the things I see on a daily basis gives me some cause for optimism, but I'll tell you that there is hardly a week that goes by. Certainly a day that doesn't go by without some major event that causes us to lose ground. End quote. Dana, what's your reaction to that?
I think that's consistent with what we have said, which is that there are extremely difficult and dangerous situation right now in Iraq, and especially in Baghdad. You see the bombing today. I don't have an official death count, but obviously it is entirely too high. Every life is precious. That includes all the innocent Iraqis, the men, women, and children who are defenseless against a barbaric enemy. We've had higher death tolls amongst our soldiers and Marines, and I think that we can expect that that will continue because the enemy knows how determined we are, and they are just as determined. And I think anybody who thinks that this enemy is tired, they are mistaken. It's a very determined enemy. They are watching what we are doing and what we are saying, and it's critically important that we finish the job in Iraq.
This doesn't sound that hopeful when we talk about the military.
It's going to take a long time before we can finish out this new Baghdad security plan, as General Petraeus has said.
Gee, and they wonder why the Democrats want to end the carnage. It's going to take a long time to even begin to stop the killing. Meanwhile, there will be more losses of innocent Iraqis in our overstretched military. Oh, well, we just have to put up with it, right? Huh? And for her to talk about the barbaric enemy. Yeah, they are barbaric, aren't they? You want to stop the slaughter? You really want to stop the slaughter? Get the invader, that's us, out. Will it stop immediately? No. They are having what is called a civil war. Isn't that a nice contradiction in terms? A civil war. Brought about by the destabilization that we took the Iraqis. Hi, how is everybody? Oh, you got a dictator. Uh-huh. Well, we've been starving your asses for 12 years and your dictator's been getting fat and sassy. Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to end your government. We're going to disband your military. We're going to destroy your police force. We're going to ruin your water supply. We're going to blow up your electrical supply. We'll protect the oil fields. We're going to destroy your antiquities. We're going to ruin your schools. We're going to further traumatize and murder your children. We're going to make you all sick. We're going to fill your country with depleted uranium so that you rat bastards will continue to die, not just now, but for the next 10 generations. Oh, and by the way, we're also bringing you democracy. Where's your gratitude?
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show. Only on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour. All right. Two more from Too Much Cappuccino Perino. Or one more, I should say. This reporter happens to be Victoria Jackson. Returns to the photo op propaganda scene that Rove staged Monday. And Victoria Jackson asked this question. Dana, in his speech on Monday, the president said, quote, families gathered here understand that our troops want to finish the job, end quote. Dana, what evidence does he actually have for that? Because there doesn't seem to be any polling data whatsoever to support the idea that the troops do want to stay and finish the job rather than go home. You know, the only polling data, Dana, there seems to be is an Army Times poll that came out last December, which seems to show, really, that the doubts are whether the troops actually feel that they could finish the job and whether they want to finish it.
I'm not familiar with that poll. I do know that the president feels confident that when he describes what he hears from the troops, that he's being as forthcoming as he can with the American people. And you just have to, you know, I think that a lot of it could be anecdotal, but, you know, I'm not a polling expert, and we don't, as you know, make decisions based on polls.
So this isn't based on any empirical data. This is based on people he's spoken with.
I think that people he's spoken with, generals he hears from that are over there on the ground, people that he talks to. I mean, he talks to many outside experts. Yeah, I think that he feels very comfortable that the troops, families of the troops, believe that this mission should be completed.
Bat squeeze. What mission, Dana? How much you want to bet, Dana, that most of the families of the troops and the troops themselves don't even know what the current mission is? Oh, let me see. Establish democracy? Defeat the terrorists? By definition, Dana, you don't defeat terrorists. You don't. Ever. You have to try a different approach. I'll tell you what, ask the folks at Code Pink, ask Cindy Sheehan, ask anybody with a loved one in Iraq if they want that person to stay or come home. Do you really think they'd say, no, nah, I'd rather stay until Halliburton has secured the oil fields. Yeah, here, let me go kill some more. Jesus, God. BJ writes, Mike, just to let you know, I got the recall McCain petitions started. And after I got home from the party in Phoenix, I realized I'll have to ask my hair clients one by one if they want to sign it. I was thinking I might make a post on our local blog site and have people call me and tell me where they could sign it. Then, sadly, it occurred to me that I might be risking my life. You see, there was a local newspaper story about two guys who left their homes, put their things in storage, and are riding their bikes all over the West. 10 miles for every dead soldier. They have a small sign on the back of their bikes that says, Stop the War. The story reported that they have had obscenities screamed at them, food thrown at them, and they have been shot at. So sick and sad, and I'm going to advertise my anger and disgust with the war and my fury at McCain. I'm going to advertise it. No wonder the silent majority is so silent. BJ. Well, yeah, I hear you. Tim, or known by his nom de plume, Captain Canada, sent me how they voted on Alito. Just in case you're keeping score, here are the names of the Democrats who voted for the confirmation of Samuel Alito or against the filibuster that might have stopped him. Democrats voting to confirm Alito: Robert Byrd, Kent Conrad, Tim Johnson, and Ben Nelson. Democrats voting to cut off debate on Alito, in other words, end the filibuster: Akaka, Max Baucus, Jeff Bingaman, Robert Byrd, Maria Cantwell, Tom Carper, Kent Conrad, Byron Dorgan, Daniel Inouye, Tim Johnson, Herb Cole, Mary Landrieu, Joe Lieberman, Blanche Lincoln, Ben Nelson, Bill Nelson, Mark Pryor, Jay Rockefeller, and Ken Salazar. So no Democratic presidential candidates or wannabes in that list. Well, that's certainly good to know. Now, as far as all those Democratic senators whose names I just read off, thanks to Captain Canada, none of you boys or girls dare say a word about the ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court today. Not a word, or Mikey will come spank.
More powerful than a special prosecutor, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour, and we're getting very close to phone calls. As a matter of fact, very quickly here, Bob in Miami writes in, I missed a couple of good things we have brought to the Iraqis when I was going through that hideous list. Mike, remember we also gave the ungrateful Iraqi bastards torture, rape, and good old-fashioned murder. Yeah, we need to stay and complete the mission. And Jan in New York City, regarding Senator Clinton, Mike, Clinton refused to filibuster, and so did Charles Schumer. Roberts and Alito. I phoned so many times they, quote, hadn't decided, end quote. I asked what part of unitary president they hadn't decided about and got silence. Please tell your listeners that Clinton is going to say she voted against both. She did. However, she could have stopped them and chose not to. Yeah, that's very true. That's so true. But to the and thanks to everybody who sent me lists and everything. Clint in Dearborn sent me an article from the New York Times back when Alito was confirmed that had the breakdown on the vote. You know, I just don't understand why anyone's surprised that ruling came the way it came today. Every single issue now that goes before this court that on the surface has to do with, apparently has to do with abortion or terminating a pregnancy, but in fact has to do with not just a woman's right to privacy, but anyone's right to privacy is pretty much being destroyed. Medical marijuana issue, the Supreme Court has affirmed that a doctor that prescribes medical marijuana to someone who is terminal, who might have, I don't know, whatever the doctor or the patient has decided is going to be the remains of his or her lifespan, if that doctor decides to prescribe marijuana to ease the pain and the nausea, you know, you read this case after case, then the Supreme Court has ruled that they are violating federal law and are subject to arrest and imprisonment. Son of a bitch. And this has to do with control. It has to do with privacy. It has to do with interfering in doctor-patient relationships. And I, as far as I'm concerned, a doctor-patient relationship, unless the doctor is some kind of a psychopath, and I realize there are a couple of psychopathic doctors out there, and there's also an awful lot of psychopathic patients. But unless it is someone who has had his or her medical license reviewed or pulled or suspended, nobody, this is my opinion. Of course, everything on this program, I guess, is my opinion, but I just feel the need to reinforce that. Nobody has a right, I don't think, to interfere in a decision made if it's done with informed consent on the part of the patient. If the patient has done his or her homework and understands the issue as best as he or she can, not having a medical degree, and if the doctor is willing to approach the patient as someone that the doctor is trying to assist in the healing process, if all of that stuff is good and right on, and I don't care if the doctor is a medical doctor or a DO or a healer of any sort, I mean, come on, for God's sake, come on, a healer of any sort. My choice pretty much all my life has been a medical doctor, but other people choose different ways to get things done. Okay, that's fine. But that relationship between the healer and the person seeking the healing should be the last place you'd find a government agent. Oh my God, the last place you find a government agent. I have a hard time, no disrespect here, but certain Native American groups that use, for example, peyote or hallucinogenic plants and substances in their worship of their divinity, that has been upheld by the United States Supreme Court as fair. Okay, go ahead. But someone who is not practicing religion, who is just smoking marijuana in order to eat or to ease pain or nausea. No. We'll put your ass in jail for that and your doctor. Or someone who seeks the privacy of a decision, a profound decision about terminating a pregnancy. The Supreme Court ruled today that in one of these terminating processes, it is no longer a decision to be made by the doctor or the woman. It is now a matter of legislating what a doctor can or cannot do, what a patient can or cannot request. Well, I guess it doesn't interfere with requesting, but fulfilling that request now is against the law. And what is strangling to me is the fact that it's referred to as a decision on abortion. It's a decision on privacy and doctor-patient relationship and a medical decision. That's what it's about. It's 20 before the hour. Let's do some phone calls here because let's start with Norm in Phoenix, who's been hanging on forever. Norm, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. This is Norm in Phoenix. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely, Norm.
I wanted to, first of all, kind of go back to what you were saying about your girlfriend, Dirtha.
Dirtha?
Dirtha Pure Info. Yeah. The whole thing about the props.
Yeah, right.
The prop troops, you know, from the soldier, I mean, it's obviously odious. And it's pathetic from the president's perspective. But I think from the troops' perspective, it beats, you know, dodging IEDs in Baghdad or Ramadi. All you have to do is just worry that a Secret Service guy won't, you know, shoot his gun off.
Well, yeah, but a prop today and cannon fodder tomorrow, you read the paper, and just like I do, none of these soldiers are exempt. The second, third, fourth tours into combat, A, B. It used to be that war was something that was fought by young men. It was waged by old men and fought by young men. Now it's waged by cowards and in some cases fought by not old men, but certainly middle-aged men.
I totally agree with you, but I mean every
it's
day,
awful.
Every day behind, you know,
What are you making? A drink there or what?
Oh, I'm sorry. I've been doing chores around the house while I'm cold. I'll stop. Anyway, sorry about that.
That's all right, Norm.
Just very quickly about the surge and about Gates. You know, what a coincidence that they had the biggest death toll in Baghdad after we had our biggest thing in Virginia Tech. I mean, to me, it just goes to show that, you know, they're working in real time over there. Yeah. And I looked at the TV while I was on hold. I flipped the TV. It's nothing but wall-to-wall Virginia Tech. And the rest of the world is looking at, you know, I mean, nothing is registered about what we've done in Iraq all this time. But then right today, you know, are there any stories on the news? Is there any attention paid to what happened in Baghdad today? No. We're contemplating our Virginia Tech naval. And the rest of the world sees what we care about and what we don't. And we've just made more enemies. And we're up against an enemy that psychologically is brilliant. And they can do this whenever they want because we're playing on their home field. Mm-hmm. And Gates, now the thing about Gates, he paid lip service to the administration position on the bombings today. But he also said, and it's been on the news at the top of the hour, you know, talking is good when it comes to Iran. So, and the comments he made about that are comments that he's directing, I think, right back at the administration. You know, so he kind of pays a little lip service to the administration angle on the bombing so he won't get immediately fired. But to my way of thinking, Bob Gates, I never thought much of him before, but I think he's like one of the few grown-ups with any sense there. And I think he wants to keep us out of Iran. And so I just say let's not throw him right on the fire with the others.
Well, okay, but on the other hand, you know, my grandmother used to tell me all sorts of little, or share with me all sorts of little homilies and little pieces of advice I always thought was kind of like, you know, homespun and, oh, gee, Grandma, get with the game. And one of them was, you're known by the company you keep. And for anyone to assume the role of a war minister or Defense Department secretary, as Gates has, is a clear indication to me that he is identified by the company he keeps. And the company he keeps are warmongering sons of bitches who started a war for no reason, none, except their lies. And Gates is not trying to get people out of there. He's trying to win the war.
Well, see, I guess what I'm just doing is offering a plea to you to maybe keep a little bit of an open mind, because this is have you heard anybody else in the administration say that talking is good? None of them have ever said that. Bombing is good. Invading is good. Liberating is good. You know, crusading is good. And this is the only guy who's saying. He's over there, and he's telegraphing back to trying to convince Bush, I think. Talking is good, and it ought to be given a chance to work. You know, I just think we need to hear more of that out of this administration. And I think he's one of the grown-ups from the elder Bush who, you know, looks like, I don't know, Gandhi compared to his son.
Yeah, but when I hear Gates say, and I quoted it today, what Gates said He's in Tel Aviv,
making
the rounds. And when I hear what he said, yeah, we knew there was going to be an uptick in violence. Yeah, we knew people would die, but hey, we're going to stay the course. I'm sorry, I can't. I hear what you're saying, Norm. I respect your position, but
I love you, Mike. I just give him a chance because he's talking to the Israelis and to the Bush administration, saying, "Don't do this, guys."
All right, I hear you. Thanks, Norm. Gotta
take care.
Appreciate your call.
And Your Day Screening with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
10 before the hour, we're going to have lots of your phone calls when we come back. The whole final hour is going to be calls. Jack just sent me a link to an article in today's online edition of the Financial Times. Here's what it Christ. Here's what it says. Iraq could hold almost twice as much oil in its reserves as had been thought, according to the most comprehensive independent study of its resources since the U.S.-led invasion in 2003. The potential presence of a further 100 billion barrels in the Western Desert highlights the opportunity for Iraq to be one of the world's biggest oil suppliers and its attractions for international oil companies. If the conflict in the country can be resolved, if confirmed, it would raise Iraq from the world's third largest source of oil reserves to second place behind Saudi Arabia and overtaking Iran. The study from the IHS, whatever that is, International something, I'm sure, a consultancy, also estimates that Iraq's production could be increased from its current rate of less than 2 million barrels a day to 4 million barrels a day within 5 years if international investment begins to flow. That would put Iraq in the top five oil-producing countries in the world at current rates. The IH study is based on data collected in Iraq both before and after the invasion, showing the oil field's reserves and production history. The estimate is based on analysis of geological surveys. Production costs in Iraq are low, particularly compared to the more complex offshore developments. IHS estimates that they are less than $2 a barrel. Now, those are the first 10 paragraphs, albeit some of the paragraphs are only one sentence. Now, here comes the 11th paragraph. At least 170 people were killed on Wednesday in five coordinated car bomb attacks in Shia districts of Baghdad, the deadliest attacks the city has seen since the U.S. and Iraqi forces launched a joint security crackdown in February. The attacks came hours after Nour al-Maliki, prime minister, claimed that Iraqi forces would be in a position to take over primary responsibility for security in all of Iraq's 18 provinces by the end of the year. Ron Mobed of IHS said, quote, "Obviously, the security situation is very bad, but when you look at the subsurface opportunity, there isn't anywhere else like this. Geologically, it's right up there, a gold star opportunity," end quote. You filthy, blood-soaked bastard. All the death and destruction. And this pig says, well, obviously the security situation is very bad, but when you look at the subsurface, why don't you just say when you look at the oil? Can you believe this, Kathy? This is in Financial Times. 10 paragraphs in, they mention 170 people blown into red mist today. Well, there you go. If you and I have that information now, thanks to, who sent that, Jack? Or Larry, who sent that? If we have that information now, and, no, Jack sent it. And Financial Times has that information now, and is publishing it. Well, gosh, I guess the Bush crime family, the key members, that would be ExxonMobil and the rest of these bloodsuckers, I'm sure they had the information probably some time ago. So that, you know, anyone who doesn't think that that's the mission in Iraq, you really are deluded. You must be a Fox television watcher. It goes back to Smedley Butler, what he said at the turn of the 20th century when the United States Marine Corps back then, Smedley Butler, double Medal of Honor winner, I think the only one in U.S. military history, when he wrote about how the corporations were using soldiers' blood, Marines' blood, in order to establish hegemony over foreign production, foreign resources. Send in the Marines. Send them to Nicaragua. Send them to Central America. Send them to the Philippines. Send them wherever we need to seize natural resources or where we need to control local populations so that we can send in our own people to seize the national resources. This is not new stuff, which is what makes it really kind of disgusting, doesn't it? Huh? So here we are again. You know, Bob Dylan's song, to the contrary, notwithstanding, the times are changing. No, they're not, Bob. They're not changing at all. They're just repeating. That's all. Iraq, twice as much oil. Well, Jesus, there's no question that we're never going to... What? What, we're going to bring the boys home? No, I don't think so. No. Because 100 billion barrels of undiscovered oil... No, sorry. At $50 a piece is what? $500 billion, $5 trillion? I don't need, you know, what difference does it make how much profit it generates? It just further chokes the planet to death anyway. Wouldn't it be a grand day if tomorrow ExxonMobil held a press conference and they said, we're stopping, we're switching from oil to developing non-polluting energy sources, and it's not going to be nuclear. We're going to throw every single resource we have into the development of fusion energy. We're going to bust our corporate ass in order to save America. What am I talking? Never mind. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Sounds like something from a Kurt Vonnegut story, doesn't it? Twice as much oil in Iraq as originally thought. And the boys now are complaining about two or three deployments. Boys, let me tell you something, boys. America needs you now, boys. We got democracy. The terrorists, if we don't stop them there, we'll have to stop them in the streets of, Jersey City. And if we don't stop them there, boys, they're going to come over here in their funny headdresses and rape our women and kill our kids and eat our lunch. Boys, we got to get over there and stop them cold, I'm telling you. These are Muslims. These are Iraqis. Oh, and don't pay attention to that news today about the oil. That's not why we're there. It's about 7 past the hour here. It is coming out now. We're coming right to your calls, but it's coming out in New York Times and other sites, thinkprogress.org, that while Paul Wolfowitz, as Deputy Secretary of Defense, was probably the chief architect of the Iraq War, he wasn't necessarily the one who was pushing as hard as some others, although he was totally on board, but he was the chief architect. He was the one that came up with the lies and deception. It was going to be a cakewalk. They'll love us. They'll stick flags in our ears when we get there. It's turning out now that his love interest, let's call her that, Shahariza, an Arabic woman from, where is she from? Excuse me, North Africa. One of the countries in North Africa, I guess. I'm just drawing a blank. Don't send it to me. It's not important. But Shahariza, his girlfriend, was very influential in helping him architect the war in Iraq. It says here in the Times, New York Times, that it greatly helped that she was an Arab woman who is an expert on the process of democracy. The agenda was being pushed by a group in which Shaha had a crucial role. A 2004 New Yorker article called Riza an influence on Wolfowitz's thinking about Iraq. And in 2005, she was listed on the World Bank's website, quote, as a media contact for Iraq reconstruction issues. So what's turning out here is that Shahariza, Paul Wolfowitz's girlfriend, was a forced hire from orders of Wolfowitz in 2003, in 2004, in 2005. Her raises, her position, and it's not just his girlfriend. There were also several Americans that Wolfowitz brought with him to the World Bank that the World Bank governing committee or governing board wants to see gone because of their arrogance and their refusal to abide by the bylaws or rules, whatever. You can, I'm sure you can make a case against or for the World Bank. I know I certainly have in both instances, against and for. Some of the things they've done has been horrifying. Some of the things they've done have been exemplary. I'm afraid the latter is in the minority, but that's just the way it goes. Remember, this is a capitalist organization, and capitalism is about the saving of capital, the honoring of capital. It has nothing to do with human beings. If human beings benefit in the process, whoops. If human beings die in the process, whoops. Equal emphasis on the whoops. There is no effort. There is no inherent function of capitalism that insists, or I should say inherent dictum in capitalism, that insists that people be elevated out of the slime. Capitalism doesn't give a damn one way or the other. There are winners, there are losers. There are dead people, there are living people. There is collateral damage, there are people who come out just fine. But capitalism doesn't care. The only thing capitalism cares about is the nurturing and survival and increase of capital. Can we all agree on that? It is anti-family, it is anti-life, it is anti-environment, simply because it doesn't care. It can't care. It's a political economic philosophy. It doesn't have a mind. It doesn't have a moral sense. It doesn't have an ethical sense. It is an ism. But if capitalism could think, it would only think about capital. Right? Can we agree with that? All right, let's go back to the phone calls. So Shahariza, you could say, is just another tool of imperial capitalism, or capitalist imperialism, or Wolfowitz's bloodlust, or whatever you want to say. Take your pick. Will is calling from Michigan. Will has been holding on forever. Welcome to the program, Will.
Hey, Mike. I have to respond to something that Norm said. I agreed with just about everything he had to say, except right up to the point where he uttered the names Bush and Gandhi in the same sentence.
Now, this was about Gates, giving Gates a chance?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
know, I served under the Elder Bush during Desert Storm, and I just comparing Bush to Gandhi is just to me ridiculous, having seen what happened firsthand. I mean, take your car, drain the gas and oil out of it, light it on fire, throw in the tires while you're at it,
mm-hmm.
and then roast a pig over that fire until it's burnt to a crisp, and you'll get the idea of what war smells like.
Yeah.
So Bush is definitely no Gandhi. The whole family is corrupt right from the get-go. During the Civil War, they built railroads for both sides. They've been war profiteers as far back in history as the bloodline goes.
Yeah, this is a vile family, the Walker family and the Bush family, and his nasty mother's side also. These are people who apparently have been around. You know, you might want to say a couple hundred years, but if you check far enough, you'll find that, you know, vampires or bloodsuckers or ghouls are around a lot longer than a couple hundred years, you know. This is the only area in which I believe in the concept, or I believe the concept of evil. I have a lot of time believing that there exists evil and not evil. I really do. I just can't see it as a force like, say, terrorism or. I've always had a problem with believing evil, that there is such a thing as evil. I think there are evil acts, or I think there are acts that could be defined as evil. But I know a lot of people a lot smarter than me have said, no, the evil does exist. It's a counterbalance to good or divinity or whatever. But if I were to entertain the idea that evil does exist, I don't have to look at Hitler. All I have to do is look at this son of a bitch who squats in the White House and his entire family, his blood family. This is evil, if such a thing existed. I agree.
I've been watching the coverage of the Virginia Tech shootings. The national media has shown the pictures and the names and read the names and of the victims and you know, we don't see that with the people who are dying in Iraq. Where are the names of the soldiers that are coming home in flag draped caskets? Where, you know, we don't hear them on the nightly news. And those kids at Virginia Tech were it was horrible. I mean, you know, they were just sitting in a classroom. They didn't altruistically sign up to defend the Constitution. You know, I honor the sacrifices of our troops. Whether I believe in the war or not, you know, they signed up and they took an oath to defend the Constitution, and you know, their commanders the commander in chief is just disregarding that oath.
He's disregarding it altogether. Hold on a second, Will. Hold on. Let me put you on hold.
I know there's a lot of speculation that these reports in Washington mean there's going to be some kind of graceful exit out of Iraq. We're going to stay in Iraq to get the job done.
Back to Will in Michigan. Sorry, Will, we had the commercial set coming at us there head on. All right, where were you?
I was talking about how the soldiers are never mentioned by name.
Right, right, and the fact that no matter why they're there, you do honor the effort that they make. At least most of them. There are soldiers, just like there are civilians, who are nothing but thugs, punks, and murderers. And once they're given a gun as a cop or a soldier, they feel they have the right to abuse that and murder people at will. So I think that goes without saying. We're not
right.
talking about them.
Like I say, I honor the sense of duty and sacrifice that motivates people to enlist in the military. And the problem is that almost nobody else, especially people that matter, like people that make policy, like Bush, none of those people honor that sense of duty and sacrifice.
No, they do not. As a matter of fact, it goes beyond the honoring it. To them, it's a throwaway. It's a joke. It's a tissue on which you blow your nose.
Or wipe other parts of your anatomy.
That's right. That's right.
As a coincidence, you were talking about medical marijuana earlier,
right.
And I have it on reliable sources that next month they're going to be starting a ballot initiative here in Michigan to decide whether it should be legal here.
Well, even if the even it gets on the ballot in 08, even if it gets voted for. The federal government, under this criminal administration, will continue to say and follow through on prosecutions against doctors who prescribe it and patients who use it.
Right. At least
that it may be an issue that brings people out to vote. Like stem cell issue. I just. I can't quite get my mind around the depths of the disgust and contempt I have for Republicans who work against stem cell research, who work against a woman's right to privacy on medical decisions, who work against medical marijuana or anything. I don't give a damn if eating carrots through your nose is going to interfere with pain or nausea or sickness. Whose business is it except the person who has to use the substance? You know what I'm saying? I'm tired of it. Will, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in, okay? You take care. You know, when I was out in Phoenix, Kathy, over that long weekend, an awful lot of people were commenting about how much they enjoyed hearing you. You've been awfully quiet tonight.
I'm sleepy. I am one tired chick. The folks out in Phoenix, who God bless y'all for coming out, who didn't get to see me, also didn't get to see Molly. And if you did get to see Molly, you would understand why Mama Malloy tonight is just past going. She wears out four or five adults on any given day.
That's
I have
right.
to call
were,
in reinforcements.
You were on your own Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. You didn't have the old man here to crack the whip, did you?
Oh, my God. And I had all these little projects lined up that I wanted to do in the yard and in the attic and all these little house cleaning things and fixing la, 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 la. And I was, Mama, 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 Mommy, Mama, come here, Mama. No, over here, Mama. Oh.
Okay, I get
for
it.
For 4 days.
I get it. All right, I just wonder because you haven't.
Mama, you make me breakfast. No, honey, it's 2:30 in the morning. I'm hungry.
You answered the question. All right.
Can I watch Elmo? Little Einsteins, we're going on a trip, and I'm going to lose my mind.
I know. But, okay. I just wondered. Back to your phone calls.
Are you mental? There's no time to take a call.
Oh, really? Oh, we got a break. I'm sorry. My bad. All right, when we come back, we'll start with Sam and Dunedin and work our way through the remainder of the calls here. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
I'm so glad you're home.
Thank you.
Go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Let's go back to your phone call. Sam is calling from Dunedin, Florida. Hey, Sam.
Hello.
Is it Sam?
Yes, it's a woman, Sam, S-A-M-M Simpson, down here in Dunedin, Florida.
Well, hi, Sam.
Nice to be on your show. This is my first time. I originally called in because I heard you do such a fantastic job in critiquing Dana Perino, and you had about a 12-point list of, you know, some of the outrageous and horrible and illegal and ungodly, and I say with you, evil things this administration has done. And I was wondering, do you have that written down anywhere? Because I'd like to quote you. I did a grassroots run for Congress last year down here against a 36-year Republican incumbent who's just about impossible to beat, and we're still trying to bang the drum, and there's a lot of folks of us down here in Florida who are on board, you know, totally with impeaching these people, taking them out, the whole thing. And I wanted to just tell you, your show tonight's terrific, and I just wanted to say thank you for, you know, being a voice of reason and freedom in this country.
Well, it's very kind. It's very kind of you to say that. I just feel like I'm, you know, just the average Joe or the average Mike, I should say, who's just can't stand it anymore. As far as, I don't have a website where we put up transcripts. That's because my webmaster is a rock star. And everything he does for me, he does for free. Eventually, we'll probably do that. But in the meantime, about the only way you can get a rebroadcast of this program is to be a founding member to Nova M, which is the network for whom I work. And it's not that expensive. It's $100 a year or under $10 a month, penny under $10 a month. All you have to do is go to novamradio.com, and all the information is there.
Great.
Anything that you hear on this program, feel free to use it to your heart's content. I mean, it's copyrighted by me and Nova M Radio, but it's all yours. If you want it, just take it.
Great. It was just a tremendous list, a litany of the things we need to keep in mind. Did you hear as well that today the Senate decided that there's not going to be any talk about lowering drug prices or anything for Medicare or anything like that? No negotiation? They stuck that through, too?
I missed that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just it's incredible.
You know, there are several organizations in this country that have tremendous power to dictate all the way down the line from the most prominent to the most insignificant of us. And God knows capitalism sets us up, evaluates us that way. But there are several organizations or trade groups or lobbying organizations that have the power to dictate every single thing about our lives, and you would think that that would be the Congress of the United States, but it's not.
Right. Let me guess. Pharmaceuticals.
Well, in this instance, you're absolutely right. Pharmaceutical companies, they're saying, no, hell no. They're very envious of the obscene, beyond belief, stupefyingly enormous profits that the oil companies have made and continue to make. And the pharmaceuticals are, companies are saying, well, damn, you know, our profit margin is only about 3, 4, 8, 17, 26,000%, and the oil companies is up around 100,000%. We want more. So that's the reason this legislation, and the pharmaceutical companies, like the oil companies, own enough members of Congress in both Democrats and Republicans to be able to do this.
Absolutely, it's atrocious. It's unconscionable. I'm 53. I grew up, you know, when we knew what it meant to be a Democrat, where you lay down your life for civil liberties. You lay down your life for, you know, you lay down your life for what's right, not what's wrong. So we're down here fighting. I want to remind folks that August or April 28th is Impeach Bush Day. Are you familiar with that?
I should be. Impeach Bush Day is every day for me. But
well, I know.
What are you doing in Dunedin?
First. Well, we're renting an airplane with a banner that says Impeach, and we're going to have it fly around for about 3 hours. But Bush is speaking at Miami-Dade College in Miami on the 28th of April, and there's a website, a28.org. People from around the country are going to come to Miami, and we're just going to be out in the streets and hiring airplanes and trying to talk sanity into people.
Jesus, be careful.
Thank you. Hey.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a little too old for this, you know. But
well,
all of us are out there in our 50s, you know.
Yeah, well, Dunedin is not exactly a hotbed of liberalism. I'm very familiar with your part of Florida's West Coast. How do you have a lot of folks who feel this way? Or
well, it's interesting. I decided when I watched George Bush's State of the Union in January of 2006, I heard a voice that said, run for Congress. I said, okay, how do you do that?
Yeah.
So we got 4,500 signatures in 6 weeks, and
really?
We ran against the guy who was the head of the Appropriations Committee between 1999 and 2005, Congressman Bill Young, 36-year Republican incumbent, one of the behemoths. We just, you know, went out there, didn't know what we were doing, and we got about 70,000 votes, 34% of the vote, but we got our voice out there, and we told the truth.
That's impressive.
That's the most important thing. So there's a few of us down here, and there are more, of us than them, and that's the thing I really want to remind people. You know that.
That's true.
There are more of us than them, and we have to keep that in mind. It's just that people need to remember what it means to be a Democrat and to stand up and to take this country back, and I think we can do it.
That's very true. Well, Sam, I hope you stay in touch, and if you make another run, we'll give you as much airtime as you want, okay?
That is very kind of you. Listen, thank you for everything you're doing, and I will go be a subscriber. I'm going to get that script.
NovaMradio.com.
Got it. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Sam. You take care, too. Wow. Yeah, you know Dunedin, Florida. That's where Libby used to, you know, live up in that area. That's about as, I mean, it's very typically right-wing Jeb Bush supporting country. The fact that she got 34% of the vote is astonishing to me. Good for you. Virginia is calling from Alameda, California. Hey, Virginia.
How are you, sweetie? It's been so long. Welcome back home. I know everyone's happy to have you back.
Well, Kathy is, because now I get to yell at Molly.
No lie. I know how she feels when I get my grandnephew. I'm like, whoa, how did I do this the first time? Holy smokes.
God, I hear you. God, I hear you.
They're so great. They're the best. Well, sweetie, you know, we've talked a lot about pharmaceuticals tonight. One way or another, things keep going back to those crazy, corrupt animals. And when I think about all this murderous mayhem in Virginia Tech, so I will get you 10, Mike. Now, you heard the guy got sent through all the mental health, you know, systems and la-di-da. So I will get you 10. They handed him some antipsychotic or some antidepressant, followed up not at all. If he had 10 visits to a counselor, it was all that was covered, if he was covered at all. No follow-up, no follow-through, no one gives a damn, stigmatized. Mm-hmm. And then here's the logical result. It's like a total logical outcome of all the dehumanization you're talking about with capitalism and medicine. And, I mean, what are we? We are nothing but a code that results in a payment. We have 7 minutes, whether our bones are breaking, we have cancer, or we're about to kill ourselves and 20 other people.
Yeah.
You have 7 minutes. And on you go through a system where you end up in a void. And meanwhile, they don't want you to smoke marijuana. Why? Mm-hmm. Why? You might be too jolly, too happy. You might actually go march and be an activist or something. No, go be a potato head on Oxycontin. That'll make everyone happy. And it's a convoy that they got to customer forever. It's like, how can you let go of that stuff once you're on it? The painkillers, the antidepressants. I'm going to tell you, watch what you say, because now they're talking about, oh, you have, you're a threat to yourself or other people. You can't have a gun. Mm. Let me tell you something. There have been a lot more than 30 people killed in the East Bay here in the Bay Area of California. Okay, in Oakland, Fremont, Hayward, you know, the drive-bys, the mania, the insanity, folks losing their mind, mental health patients doing suicide by cop. It's not in the news either.
No.
Who cares? No one gives a darn. They're trying to turn our public housing into yuppie-dom, and they're accusing everyone who lives there of being dealers and prostitutes. Come on. We're expendable. They're trying to get rid of us, Mike. They want us killing each other. It's a perfect excuse for a dictatorship.
Yeah,
and it's unbelievable.
Nothing new there, right?
Yeah. Well, that we can't let them keep doing this. I mean, in fighting for health care at this point, and especially mental health care and the stigma. And stop leaving people to the system. We have to help each other. By the way, what you did for Sarge was really awesome. And I just got to tell you, you're one of the few genuine people I know.
Well,
that
all
puts it out there when you can, you help.
All I did with Sarge was talk. He's the one who but
he's
I appreciate.
Done a lot, and you did a lot for him, and that's the way you're supposed to be, and that's the only... Another uplifting thing besides that wonderful lady from Florida we just heard. I saw this Farmer John documentary in the Independent... In Independent Lands that PBS has, which is also where you can see the soldiers who died every single day.
Yeah.
They have a moment of silence and give you the whole lowdown and pictures of everyone, you know, who has died in this war in the Lair Report, Lair News Hour, and stuff. And they had this film on Farmer John, this documentary that was so uplifting. And
well, good. Well, good. Listen, Virginia, guess
go
what?
Go for the positive, darling. Keep each other, help each other out.
Yeah. Well, Wavy Gravy said a long time ago, we got to feed each other. Thanks a lot, Virginia. I appreciate you checking in. Hugh Romney. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
ExxonMobil is barely getting by. With millions in profits, it's just another lie. Hey, don't it make you red state? Hey, don't it make you red state? Hey, don't it make you red state?
Hammer time. Go with the flow. It is dead. If you can't move the net, you probably ought to dance away. Your hands in the air.
Ten before the hour, thanks to our crew of bandits, Ian Huff, who engineered the program in Phoenix at KPHX and answered your calls. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall, our webmaster, the moderators at MikeMalloy.com/message board, I believe. Catherine Bay is the executive producer of this program. And don't forget to go to NovaMradio.com and sign up, please. Quick email from Sheila. Thank you for not jonesing out on the Virginia Tech story. Thanks to the complete nervous breakdown of the U.S. media, it's been a long, hard 6 years for those of us who believe that journalism exists for one reason only, to hold those in power to account and to speak truth to that power. All media, print and electronic, are obscenely obsessed with the shooting at Virginia Tech, none more so than CNN, the most twisted name in news. CNN anchors are on the scene in full investigation mode, mercilessly interrogating university officials, police officials, and friends of those murdered. How did it feel? How will this affect your life? Should someone have seen Cho Shuanghee's break coming? Who's responsible? Tell us. Tell us how you feel. What is it like to see your friends in the hospital? What are you going to do next? How are you going to move on? CNN then went on to go down a list of victims, giving their names and airing interviews with family members who were asked how it felt to lose their children. Meanwhile, the 40 faceless, nameless, familyless American soldiers and Marines killed last week, the 10 killed on Monday of this week, were not important enough to get CNN's attention. The 157 human beings killed in Baghdad today as a result of four car bombs weren't even a blip on CNN's TV screen. I believe the final tally today was 233 killed. There were also at least 150 injured in those blasts. Maybe CNN should ask them how they feel. Sheila. Yeah. But Sheila, being a journalist, you understand the corruption that has occurred. What used to be a reasonably reliable source of information, commentary, critique, and as you and others have put it, speaking truth to power, or at least challenging power, that is gone by the by now. It just simply does not exist anymore, except in a few isolated pockets, most of which are in print. It's real. It's really upsetting. You know, that's where I got my start as in journalism. And I do remember what it was like, what we were supposed to do, what the whole purpose was. Why journalism as a separate discipline even existed. You know, I remember that. I really do. Especially investigative journalism, or just journalism, just reporting the truth without a slant, and challenging power. You know, one of the functions was to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. Oh, that sounds so quaint. Now it does, anyway. Yeah. That's how I started out. Journalism. It has the same root as the word journey, by the way. Well, anyway, it's not like that now. Deborah is calling from Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Deborah.
Hey, Mike. I was at the birthday celebration in Phoenix.
Ow, wasn't that fun?
Yes, and I tell you, I pushed my way to the front. I was all ready to shake your hand, and you disappeared.
I didn't.
Yes, now I know where you were. You were probably at the nearest bar drinking wine.
Well, no, people kept bringing me glasses of wine.
So on birthday celebration number two, now I'm going to plant myself at the bar that's closest to the stage and just wait for you.
You know, normally I really am not that much of a drinker. I love wine,
uh-huh.
But and I found that it I started drinking wine on the advice of my physician, frankly. But at that party, I forget who, it might have been Kim, our promotions director at KPHX. Bless her heart. I love Kim to death. I think Kim may have been the one who kept saying, well, Mike, here, have a glass of wine. Well, I'm sorry if I disappeared.
I know. It was
Are
fun.
You sure? Now, are you it sure fun. It wasn't you that disappeared?
No, I was there. I went up and said hi to Jeff and
yeah.
Met Bell Press and shook Tom Hartman's hand.
Yeah. Did you meet Stephanie?
No, I didn't. There were a crowd of people around her. I couldn't get close. I met the Drobneys.
The Drobneys are great.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you were there. I'm glad you did have a good time,
well,
right?
Well, and listen, a teacher friend of mine went with me, and she brought her 94-year-old mother, who listens to Nova M Radio all day long.
Oh, my God. Bless her heart.
Oh, she was so excited to meet Bill Press. And
I'm sure she was.
Yeah.
Well, he's famous. He's a television dude. That's right. He used to go head-to-head, you know, with Pat Buchanan and did a damn good job.
Yeah.
I was impressed to meet Bill Press.
Yeah.
You know, he and I both worked at CNN at various times. I'd never met him before. And, you know, we were staying at the same hotel. And when I saw him in the lounge getting a cup of coffee, I went up and said, hi, Mr. Press.
Well, it was. I just thought it was great.
Well, thanks. I'm glad you did. And I'm sorry I missed you. Next time we do it, Deborah, I'll be there. And
Hey, listen. Somebody in the crowd told me that you like to get hugs.
I do. I
Is
love
that
hugs.
True?
Yeah. Oh God, I love hugs.
Okay, I'll give you one, and you're number two.
Ow! Thanks a lot, Deborah.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Take care. I love hugs. Who doesn't love hugs? Oh my God. Thanks for participating tonight. I appreciate it. And by the way, did I thank Jeff Ferris for filling in for me last night? I don't think I did. Jeff, thank you. I appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Okay? Torquemada testifies tomorrow. That's going to be interesting. Take care. Okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.